Okay, Erev to everybody. Welcome to our weekly Parshat HaShavuot here, Parshat Shmini, Tavshin Pei Beit. Okay, I feel, you know, like, what do they call it on Broadway, the actors, you know, who have to learn the parts in case they have to go in at the last minute. So this is, whatever,
understudy.
Yeah. Understudy. There you go. So I hope I qualify. I hope it'll be, you know, something, good. It's last minute, but anyways, whatever. One of the original speakers under the weather, and then whatever. So here I am, and hopefully it'll be a nice year. Whatever. I didn't have quite as much time to put it together as I might have liked, but you can let me know afterwards. Okay. Well, I called it. I was trying to think. Okay, at 7 o'clock, what should I call the shiur? So called it The Sounds of Silence, even though I'm not, that's Simon and Garfunkel, I think. I had so little interest in this type of music growing up, but I think The Sounds of Silence I know. And of course, that would be a reference to Aaron, by Yidam Aaron. And I want to talk about, of course, this is one of only two stories in Sefer, in Vayikra. And if we have time at the end, maybe we'll compare it to the second story. Both stories are very cryptic. Both stories sort of take place in the middle of nowhere and don't occupy a lot of space, really. This actual story, just a few verses. And, this one is in the middle, Nadav HaNavi is in the middle of the Shivat Yemei Miluim. It's really the continuation of Sefer Shmot. The dedication of the Mishkan, which is really a year after they left Egypt, right? The command, which we'll read next week, Parshat HaChodesh, is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, is the first day of Nisan. The Jewish people are told to prepare for Pesach. We won't discuss the question now. Of course, they're already told to eat matzah then. In other words, the Jews had 2 weeks' notice. They were told they're going to have to eat matzah. So it's clearly eating matzah is much more than we left Egypt in a hurry, but that's for a whole other year. That was year one on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Year two, the next year on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, of course, is when they dedicated the Mishkan, and that we read about a couple of weeks ago in Pekudei, and the dedication of Mishkan. This is really going backwards a little bit, and we're discussing the lead up. Aaron is going to get appointed as the Kohen Gadol, and of course, in the middle of the festivities, so to speak, have a terrible tragedy on the death of Aaron's two eldest sons, Nadav and Avihu. And we're not going to discuss so much why they died. We don't know. There's no good answer. We'll see. But I want to start, just because I think it's such a powerful point, I want to start with the comment of the Netziv. Netziv always has fantastic insight. See, of course, the great Rosh Yeshiva in the Yeshiva in Valazh in 1816, 1893. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Valazh, I think, from the mid-1850s or so, I believe, till 1892, when he closed the Yeshiva, because they could learn about the Russians, basically. They could learn 2 hours a day, and only when it's daylight. And the Yeshiva closed 1892, and he died a year later. I was in 1893, and I mentioned a number of times he was unlike many. It was all great people are different, unique. They don't fit molds, and so Valazhin had a lot of things that they don't do, in other yeshivas. Even though it's the model, but one of the things is that he gave a Parshat HaShavuot shiur. That's generally, the Rosh Yeshiva, was he wasting his time on Parshat HaShavuot shiur, the learning Gemara? But the Netziv thought the Chumash was very important, and his comments were collected into Emek Davar. And he has some fantastic insights sometimes, really unbelievable. So here, if you take a look, so after Nadav and Avihu dies, so Moshe tries to comfort Aaron, and he says, "Bekrovaya Kadesh, with the ones who are closest to me, I'm sanctified." But then it says that, what did Moshe do? Moshe told, let me find the pasuk, he told Mishael and El Safan to remove the bodies. Why can't I find it? You have to trust me. Hold on. Let me find it. So it says that Moshe told, okay. I don't know, I don't see it, but give me half a second, otherwise I'll do it without the pasuk. Oh yeah, by Moshe, Moshe Belazar, it's right there in Pasuk Dalet. Moshe called Mishael and El Safan, the sons of Uziel, the uncle of Aaron. And he told them, you come close and you remove their bodies. So why in the world did he call Mishael and El Safan? Who in the world were they? You know anything about them? We know Nadav and Avihu. They weren't, he didn't call Elazar and Itamar, the two younger brothers of Nadav and Avihu. He called their youngest first cousins, Mishael and El Safan. So then it's, see, and anybody want to go and suggest the reason why he called them? In other words, the Torah tells us they could have said they took out the body. They could have said anything. But the Torah goes out of its way to say that Moshe Rabbeinu called Mishael and El Safan b'nei Uziel, and the sons of Uziel, the uncle of Aaron. And v'yomer liam kervu, suat echechem, take out your brother. Not in literal sense. Yeah.
In Pirkei Avot, it says that when, there are a few times in Perek Dalet, it says, when Mito Lefanav, that in that cases, that should not involve comfort or anything to do with the people, because the first they were shocked, they went to a terrible trauma, and that's the reason you cannot call somebody, especially a brother.
Okay, so you want to say it's too hard. It's too hard. So I don't know if that's interesting. Yeah, I hear. Maybe it's too hard for the brothers. Like, I don't know. When you go to a funeral, who are the pallbearers? Right. So you won't have the immediate family. Okay, that could be. It would have been too hard.
You have a funeral with a few days after. Yeah,
I understand.
At the moment.
Yeah. Okay, so that could be. Then Itziv offers another reason. He says like this. He says, Aaron... not everybody liked Aaron. People were jealous of Aaron. Nepotism. He got his position. You know, he's Moshe's brother. Moshe already has a position. And it, had they called on, let's say they called, would have called on Korach. They would have called on somebody like that to take out the body. So then it seems, says the person taking that would have had a little bit of pleasure. In other words, yeah, he's sad now that one of you died, but you know what? Now it's my turn. I'll get appointed. You know, there was a hint of perhaps satisfaction that they got what they deserved. Mishael and El Safan were the two youngest cousins. Uziel is the youngest brother, and Mishael and El Safan are the two youngest cousins of Moshe and Aaron. So by calling them, in other words, they had no claims to leadership. Nobody would have thought that they, you know, are going to get appointed. So they could do it totally for the sake of the mitzvah without anybody saying, they have a little bit of joy that Aaron got what they deserved. I think it's a very powerful insight. And we have this, and the truth of the matter, we know that the Rashi tells us that the reason Korach began his rebellion was because El Safan ben Uziel, his younger cousin, got appointed the Nasi of Shevet Levi, and we'll read in Bamidbar. And it's bad enough there's Moshe and Aaron, but I'm the son of Yitzhar. You know, Yitzhar is the second son. So why should Amram get two and then go to four, go to Uziel, the fourth? So that's why he did the whole rebellion. This is, of course, the exact opposite. And the truth of the matter, there is a view in the rabbis that what was the punishment, or what did Nadav and Avihu do wrong? So they said that they were waiting for Moshe and Aaron to die. They were next in line. They were pious people. They were the appointed leaders. It sounds very, very harsh. And in a sense, it is harsh. And I don't even know if they mean it in a literal sense. But it's human nature. It's human nature. People, when are they going to die? We're going to take over. You know, people wait for the politician to retire, and et cetera, et cetera. So some say that Nadav and Avihu really had this harbored a little bit of yearning to take over the leadership, and that was why they were punished. So El Safan and Mishael and El Safan had absolutely no claim to leadership. So we know they could do it 100% with pure intent. That's what the Nesiv writes. You have a similar idea, I think I once explained before, by Yaakov Avinu and Purim, So, you know, when Yaakov tricks Esav, or he tricks his father, he tricks Yitzchak to pretend he's Esav. So when Esav comes by, it says, Vayitzak tza'aka gedola umara ad mo'od, that Yitzchak let out, or Esav let out a wild cry, a terrible cry. Vayitzak tza'aka gedola umara ad mo'od. And the Meshur says that cry was picked up 1,500 years later in Shushan, when Mordechai had to go out by Yitzak Tzaka Gedola Marad Mordechai. I think it's the same exact wording, if I'm not mistaken. In the Megillah, had to go to cry. And that was a punishment. That was a punishment for Yaakov tricking Esav and pretending he was who he wasn't. So the Netziv, although he doesn't relate these two as far as I know, but the Netziv over there says that what Yaakov did, what we call an Avera Lishma. An Avera Lishma is this very strange concept. The Gemara discusses by Yael and the killing of Sisera, and perhaps she had sexual relations with him, that sometimes a person is allowed to do a sin, an Avera Lishma. The Gemara says, Gadol, it's greater. An Avera Lishma, a sin with pure intent, is greater than a mitzvah that's done without intent, Shalom Lishma. It's a very... you have to spend some time figuring out what that Gemara means and what the applications are. But then the Gemara sort of says it's the same, maybe it's not greater. So, but an Avera Lishma means you're allowed to sin if your motives are pure, because there's some higher goal that one has to achieve, and that you're allowed to do if it's done with pure motivation. So the Netziv explains that Yaakov Avinu had no choice. Esav wasn't worthy of the blessings. Whatever, let's go with that assumption. And he had no choice, so he did. He sinned. He had to hurt his father, had to trick his father. It was very painful for him. So he said that there was no punishment for that. That was what we call an Avera Lishma. He sinned, and he had absolutely pure intention. He was pained that he had hurt his father and he had to trick his father. But that he had to hurt Esav a little bit, that he got Esav a little bit, you know, a shtacht Esav. That didn't bother him so much, you know, so that took away from his Avera Lishma. And it was no longer a pure sin, because he got a little bit of benefit from taking from Esav. And that's why the Midrash says 1500 years later, that cry sort of was in abeyance until Mordechai had to go out and cry. But one can only do an Avera Lishma if you're totally be motivated for heaven, which basically no human being can ever be totally motivated for heaven. It's next to impossible. We all have ulterior motives, and normally we do say l'olam yasakata b'mitzvah tor mitzvah shelo lishma. You should always do the right thing for the wrong reason, mitzvah. And from doing it shelo lishma, you come to do lishma. From doing it for the wrong reasons, you'll eventually come and hopefully do it for the right reason. So here it's a little bit of the same concept. Anybody else who would have taken out the bodies, the fear was that have a little bit of shelo lishma. They're not doing it just for the mitzvah. They're doing it for, you know, they're a little bit, they have a little bit of joy deep down inside them. So therefore he called on the two youngest cousins who had no claims, who nobody would think that they even would think that they could have any claims to leadership. I have often said it reminds me of the amazing halakha, how Chazal say, if me or you were to say this law, that stone us for good reason. But since the rabbi said it, we can get away with it. It's a beautiful halacha, I think a well-known halacha, that if a parent dies and a child inherits $1 million, so the kid, I don't know what the amount is. I made up $1 million. He inherits a lot of money. So some people, that's 100,000. Some people, that's 10 million. I don't know what it is. So he inherits a lot of money. He makes two blessings. Baruch Diana Amet, that they always make for a funeral. God is the righteous judge. And then he makes a Shechianu. He became a millionaire. He's very happy. He's very happy. He came, his father died. No, his father died, but he's a millionaire. So, of course, and nobody's claiming he's happy that his father died. But Chazal understood, when you get $1 million, you're happy, even if it had to come about through the death of your father. We could never do that on our own. It would be such a chutzpah for somebody to make a blessing for getting $1 million, inheriting $1 million, if not for the fact that our sages ordained such a blessing. Our sages understood we cannot always do things lishma, and therefore, even when tragedies happen, there often is a tinge of joy. There's something, you know, I'm not talking about comfort. To comfort a person is something else, but there's something they're glad they got that they wouldn't have gotten had this not happened. Yeah, it's really terrible. The president got assassinated, but you know what? I got appointed the president because he got assassinated. So you're not going to tell me there's not a little bit of that's what it means to be human, and our rabbis understood that. So here we're trying to go above that, and of course this is the whole problem here. Nadab and Avihu were very high level, and they somehow did something slightly wrong and got punished for it. You have the same thing, by the way, Ephraim and Manasseh is the same idea of younger brothers not caring. In other words, when Yaakov wants to bless Ephraim before Manasseh, and Yosef said, "What are you doing? Manasseh is the older one." It's Yosef who gets upset. It's not Manasseh and Ephraim. So Manasseh and Ephraim had this sort of, brotherly love, which is they're the only brothers in Sefer Bereishit who don't fight, if you may have noticed, which is probably why we bless our children, Simcha Elohim, Ephraim, Manasseh. We don't say like we don't say like Reuben and Shimon. Okay, I understand you don't want to say like you can say Yitzchak and Yishmael. The Gemara says Yishmael did tshuva. Yaakov and Esav, maybe not, but lots of brothers of Yaakov you can choose. But no, because fighting. So only Ephraim and Manasseh didn't fight, and it was Yosef who got upset, not Ephraim and Manasseh. By the way, who was appointed? Elzaphan ben Uziel is appointed, but even though Mishael is older. In other words, even the appointment, in other words, the Torah is already hinting that these brothers were special. They didn't have any jealousy. They didn't care. And it was Korach who got upset when Elzaphan got appointed the Nasi, but his older brother, Mishael, did not get upset. Okay, so that's, I think, it's a beautiful insight and a beautiful point that Nitziv makes about this sort of innocuous thing. Moshe, I mean, who cares who took them out? Why does the Torah have to tell us who took out the bodies? Somebody took out the bodies, obviously. So, the Torah is going out of its way because it wants to stress this idea. That's what he said. Okay, let's talk a little bit. So we don't really know what they did wrong. That's like all great people. Like, we don't know what Moshe Rabbeinu did wrong. I always love the comment. I believe it's the Orachaim HaKadosh who says it. That's what we call him. He's analyzing the sins. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm not going to talk about this, because every parshan, every commentator who talks about it finds a new sin. He hit the rock. He yelled at the Jewish people, Shimon Hamorim. He said, Notzi lechemayim. Everybody finds a different sin because the sin is so unclear. So we keep piling on sins onto Moshe Rabbeinu. So he doesn't want to pile on another sin. Of course, then he goes on and he discusses, and of course, he piles on another sin because that's, what commentaries do. We have to find some insight, some new idea. So it's the same thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Medak Dekim HaTzadikim Kachut HaSara. That God is very exacting with righteous people. The smallest of sins, sometimes he'll punish. Sometimes not, as we will see in a moment by Aaron. Okay, so who is Aaron? So, Vayidom Aaron. I write the famous Pasuk. Moshe says to Aaron, Hu Asher Diber Bekrovaya Kadesh. This is what God said. They're very holy. Not that many of you are very holy. That's why they had to die. Sort of a little bit strange, right? I think maybe that's why they should live. Kiddushim, but Krovai Akadesh, Apnei Ha'am, Achabeid. There'll be honor for the whole people. Somehow their death brings honor. Vayidom Aaron, and Aaron was silent. So what does it mean he was silent? He didn't say anything. Okay, what does it mean? So I don't know if it's Rashi quotes it, but the Nesiv also quoted it. See, I was looking up the Nesiv a bit. Says, Vayidom Aaron, he didn't cry. He didn't cry. That's not nice. What do you mean he didn't cry? Normal people cry. I mean, it's a terrible tragedy to lose two sons. I mean, this is awful. So why would he cry? He says it's Meguneh. It's disgusting of Aaron not to cry. Unless... And this is also, I guess, very hard for normal human beings, unless you realize that the God is doing it for the right reason. In other words, then by crying, you're sort of getting upset at God. It's true we make a bracha, we say Diana Hamet, but Diana Hamet is not Hatova Hametiv. Hatova Hametiv, you win $1 million, you inherit $1 million, you say a Shachin, you don't say Shachin when a person dies. Oh, whatever God does is for the good. That's not really so good. It's not good for us. Somebody does not good. And on a certain scale, we accept the fact that what God does is good. But the Mishnah says you make the dynamic when something bad happens. Death is only one of them. Your crops get spoiled. You make different acknowledgments of God. It doesn't mean it's very good. But here, there was a realization that there's something, I don't want to say something positive, but the deaths were maybe something is positive. We'll see. The deaths were totally warranted. And what did so Vayitom? He was silent. He kind of had acceptance. He didn't cry, but he wasn't happy. It doesn't say Vayishma. That's what he doesn't say. Oh, that's great. He was obviously very saddened inside, but he didn't express his sadness. Why not? Why not? So the Netziv says that Aaron instinctively knew that they died. Why did they die? This was a punishment for Aaron. They died not because of what they did. They died because of what their father did. And their father was the ringleader of the Chet Egel. Their father had built the Egel. I mean, you know, that's basically, you know, that's what happened. I mean, where's the whole discussion? Was Aaron justified in what he did? But Aaron felt, this is how the Netziv writes, he's not the only one. We'll see in 1 second, it's based on Rashi, that Aaron knew that he was being punished for Chet Egel, and the punishment had to be given. I mean, Chet Egel, 40 days after Mount Sinai, and Aaron says, let's build the golden calf, idolatry, you know. Although, you know, how could he do that? Where is this hinted at? So the Chet Egel is written twice.
Can I say something here?
Sure.
I think that sometimes silence is louder than words.
100%. And there's no, you know, the halach is when you go to a shiva house, you're not supposed to talk until the avel talks to you. They're not in the mood to talk. It's not a social club. You're not there to cheer them. I mean, maybe you are there to cheer them up, but only if they want to be. You only engage in conversations. A lot of people find very hard to observe. Sometimes you walk into a shivas and they're like one other person or no other people there sometimes. And you sit down and the mourner doesn't say anything. Usually they will say something, but I've been to shiva houses where, you know, they sometimes, and it's a terrible tragedy or some, they're just not in the mood for talking, and it's not you're not supposed to engage them. So it's Vayidom Aaron. Silence is very important. So that's right. Silence is golden, you know, but but still, in other words, then it seems when that Vayidom means he was silent, but he had inside, he was upset. But he didn't express his upsetness. He didn't even cry. There's one thing to be silent, not to say anything, but usually people will cry. The silence is by speech. Usually people cry. They may not say anything. So, anyways, but yes, silence says a lot. So
in modern Hebrew, dom is no movement.
Right. I don't know if it's created. I'm thinking now, adom.
No,
I don't know if that's that connected. I have no idea. I doubt it.
In the army, when you say amod dom,
right, right, stand still,
no movement.
Yeah, basically, I know. Anybody know Hebrew if it's connected to red? I doubt.
No, it's not. It's actually taken from that parasha.
Okay.
Vayidom Aaron. It's from that movement.
Okay, thank you.
When we go to Shiva, unfortunately, we are not there to cheer them up. We are not there to promise them that tomorrow is better. We are there only to be there if they need you.
Correct. You don't have to say anything. Okay, let's go on. So the Chet Egel, so when Moshe Rabbeinu recounts the Chet Egel in Parshat Ekev, so he says, you did this, you know, terrible thing. And God wanted to destroy you. And I went and I prayed for 40 days. I didn't lechem lo achalti, lo shatiti. I didn't eat any bread. I didn't drink any water. 40 days I was praying day and night for the sin that you did. You did evil before God and you made God really angry. And then Moshe said, Uba Aaron, hitanaf Hashem ma'od lashvido. And regarding Aaron, notice this is not said in Parshat Kitisa. It is not said when the sin of the golden calf happened. A lot of things like that. The Chumash, like any great author, often the stories, the details are filled in later. The Yosef stories like that. There's so many stories in Chumash that we only find out details in a later event that is retrospecting what had happened earlier. So now 40 years later, Moshe Rabbeinu is recounting. Aaron is not alive, by the way. And remember, Aaron dies in Parshat Chukat. Aaron dies right after they hit the rock. And why he had to be punished, that's what did he do? But okay. But the last 5 weeks of Moshe's life, Aaron isn't alive anymore. Aaron dies on Rosh Chodesh Av, by the way. It's fascinating. It's the only Yortzeit mentioned in Chumash. The only date of death mentioned in the Torah is Aaron's date of death, the first day of the fifth month, the Rosh Chodesh Av, which Misha Nichnas Av and Mati Mesimcha, it's obviously is connected in some way. But Aaron, the Oev Shalom and the Rodev Shalom, the one who left peace and pursued peace, dies on the first day of the month where the Jewish people engage in Sinat Chinam, the breaking. And no other person, Moshe dying on Zayin Adar is not mentioned in the Chumash. We know Sarah lived to be 127. We don't know when she died. We don't know when anybody died. Only Aaron, the only person we know when he died. So that's actually a fascinating thing. So Aaron died, Moshe is alive, and Moshe is now recounting the sin of the golden calf. He says God was really, really mad. It's very Aaron hitanaf, and that's a strong word. Very arts bro, have the arts bro, very angry. I don't think very angry captures the hitanaf. Ma'od. Hitanaf ma'od lahashmido. That's Haman, lashmid, you know? To wipe lashmid, la regula bait. Lashmid, like genocide. Aaron, God was really angry. Maybe the Jewish people he could forgive, maybe, but Aaron is going to participate. And I pray for Aaron at that time. So what does Rashi say? What does it mean God was going to wanted Lashmid, wanted to kill him? Lashmi means to wipe out your line, your future. Well, he was going to kill all the sons of Aaron. All four sons were about to die. Aaron couldn't have any lineage. The lineage had to end with Aaron. That's how terrible the sin was. That's what it means. Lashmi, genocide. We're going to wipe out the people. There will be no future. So the line of Aaron is going to be wiped out permanently. That it's in Rashi. I know it's maybe that's what it says. Lashmi do zek kilui banim. This is the wiping out of children. The chenu umer lashmi perome ma'al. Okay, quotes a pasuk in Amos. So I prayed for Aaron. I prayed for the people. That was one prayer. And I prayed for Aaron also. And Rashi says, my prayers work 50-50. God listened to half my prayers. Two of them died. And two of them lived. So this is unbelievable that Nadav and Avihu died, not because they didn't do anything wrong. Look in the Chumash. What do? They brought other views. Want to find things they did wrong. They wanted to bring a korban to God. How wonderful. What a beautiful thing they wanted to do. Everybody's celebrating. Wait a minute, they weren't commanded. So we have the Vayikra begins with korbanot. You're not commanded. We begin with the korban ola in Vayikra and stuff. Many korban, you're not commanded. You bring because you want to bring them. You want to show love of God. You want to give thanks to God. You're not commanded to do it. Certain times you're commanded. So they were punished not because of what they did wrong, but they were punished because of what Aaron had done wrong. You're going to tell me that's not fair. Loim tu avod al banim. There's a verse in the Torah. We're not allowed to punish the children for the sins of the parents. And below loim tu banim al avotam. And you can't punish the fathers for the sins of the children. That verse is so obvious, and that's redundant. The idea that you can't punish one for the other, so obvious that Rashi, I believe, quotes, what we really learn from that verse is you can't testify. In other words, obviously you can't kill the one for the sins of the other, even though in Hammurabi's code they used to do that, and from a historical basis, the Torah might be playing off of that. The Torah might be done, do not follow what they said in Hammurabi's code, that they would punish, if you were building and you killed the other person's son by accident, they would kill your son as punishment. So the Torah is clearly going against that. Okay, Beseder. But on a, internal level, that was very obvious. You can't kill one for the other. Sigmar says you can't testify one for the other. A father cannot testify in a court, or a son against a father, or a brother against a brother. I always say it's a terrible thing that the brother has to go to jail or the electric chair. When they didn't have jails or they have electric chairs either, but you understand what I mean. To have one brother testifying against another, I think Judaism preferred the person go free. Find other witnesses or let them go free, because what it would do to a family dynamic that one testifies against the other. I know this happens all the time in the Western world. We do things like that. We try to get, one to snitch on the other. The halacha is very much against that. But for sure, one, you can't punish one for the sins of the other. So that's very nice. That's a court of law. That's me and you can't do that. God doesn't operate that way. God operates his own justice system. We don't understand it. We don't like it. Okay, that's That's a different problem. But the notion of loyim tu avara banim, that you cannot punish the sins, the child for the sins of other, or as the halacha understands it, you cannot even testify. Relatives cannot testify one against the other. That is a human construct and a divine construct. God can do that. And that's what the Netziv, that's what Rashi is saying, that basically Nadav and Avihu had to die for the sin of Aaron, for the golden calf. That was his punishment. Moshe tried. He got them half off. He managed to save Elazar and Itamar. And in that sense, the lineage of Aaron did continue. And Pinchas, and, you know, we have Aaron. Now, why was that so important? Why was that so important that they had to do that? So the Meshech Chachma, I don't know that the Netziv says that. The Meshech Chachma is also a little bit younger. Meshech Chachma dies, I believe, in 1926. Rav Meir Simcha of Divinsk. He lived. It was the rabbi in Divinsk. It was a fascinating person. Also wrote a commentary on the Rambam, the Or Sameach. Rav Kuperman, the head of the Michlala for many years. That's he wrote his magnum opus, the commentary on the Meshech Chachma. So the Meshech Chachma says in a couple places it has to be this way, because the Jewish people basically got away with the sin of the golden calf. You know, they sinned. God was going to destroy them. Moshe said, it's not a good idea. Yeah, the Egyptians are going to say you're not powerful. But so, however it worked, God, you know, what do you want from a bunch of slaves? How can you expect any better? Whatever works. Bottom line is the Jewish people got away with the sin of the golden calf. So, but it was very important, therefore, that they shouldn't think they can get away with whatever they want. So they had to see sometimes that God can get angry at little things. That you thought you got away with golden calf here, and some guy brought a little korban to God, not to worship idols. He brought it to God, and we're gonna kill them because they did something minor wrong. And then he really takes it a step further. If you look in Bamidbar, where we have the census of the Jewish people, which is, by the way, only 1 month after this, right? We lose track of time. But Vayikra takes place in a time vacuum. Really, there's like, it's not, you know, like I said, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Bamidbar opens up the second year in the second month, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, right? It's 1 month later. Just they had Pesach Sheni, right? That's also in Bamidbar. It actually goes back. Parshat Balotcha goes back to the first day of the first month. And Rashi explained the Torah didn't want to open up with the story of Pesach Sheni. In other words, this exact date, the date of Nadav and Abihu's death. And then the people say, we are Tamei. Some say they were Tamei because they got Tamei through Nadav and Abihu. They couldn't do Pesach Sheni. That's really the beginning of Bamidbar. That is chapter 9 in Bamidbar. But Bamidbar puts it in chapter 9. So Rashi says it wouldn't be nice because that was the only Pesach they observed in the desert. We don't want to start off with something not so nice. We start off with the love of God. God counts the Jewish people, right? Each one of the five books of the Torah begins with God's love of the Jewish people, right? Bereshit, that why did we start with Bereshit? Well, because we want to say God gave the Jewish people to the land of Israel to the Jewish people. Why Shmot? We already have it in Vayigash. We know that. Now Shmot, we always want to say the names. God loves to count over and over again. So repeat the names. Vayikra, we call out. That's a sign of love. Vayikra El Moshe. Bamidbar, again, we're going to count. The Jewish people, God loves the Jewish people. We're going to start with the count. Dvarim, okay, Dvarim, we're going to rank out the Jewish people, but no. Elu Dvarim, Paran, Ben Tofo, Ben Soup. We want to only hint at places. God loves us too much. He doesn't want to directly criticize us. He only wants to hint at the criticizers. So each one of the five books of the Chumash opens up with the idea of God's love of the Jewish people. So we don't want to open up a Bamidbar with the story of Pesach Sheni, which is like, in other words, this time, like Parshat Shmini and Balotcha are the same day. It's going on at the same time. We just read it like 3 months apart. But anyways, in Sefer Bamidbar, in Parshat Bamidbar, which is a month later, even though it's earlier in the Parshiot, this is the first day of the second month when they take the census of the Jewish people. So when they come to take the census of the Jewish people, when they come take the census of Aaron, so what does the Torah say? Pakoda p'nei Levi, okay, hinei lakachti ko, okay, what does it say? Here we go. Ve'ele shmot p'nei Aaron. Now we're going to count off Aaron. Habachor Nadav Avihu. Well, that's nice. Elazar v'Tamar. Elish v'apin Aaron Akonim v'mimjem. V'yamad Nadav and Avihu l'vnei Hashem. That's very nice. We're taking a census. Why are you counting people who are dead? Whereas, why does the Torah mention when they introduce Aaron that he was the Nadav and Avihu died? So you can say the Torah is giving the whole history, but we already know that. I know that. So the Meshech Chachma explains it was very important. That's a harsh thing. It's really not good to be a leader. You got to be Lishma when you're a leader. This really is true. The Jewish people had to see Aaron suffer. Because what did the Jewish people say? Hold a second. Why are the Levim the Levim? Why are the Kohanim the Kohanim? Because they didn't sin at the sin of the golden calf, right? That's what we say. The Bechor, the elders, the eldest child was the person who was the, you know, the eldest. That's what I always say. That's for preparation. It's all about Yaakov and Esav. Who's going to be the eldest? The eldest gets to serve. But it was taken away from them because of the sin of the golden calf. That's very nice. What happens? So the eldest lose their right. The 3,000 ringleaders of the golden calf get killed. But the chief ringleader of the golden calf, Aaron HaKohen, the one whose idea, the one who came up with the idea, he gets off scot-free. So that would be terrible for the people to see. It's an unbelievable idea. It's like a little scary. So the Meshech Chachma says, therefore, the Torah wants to point out, you should know, Aaron, you think he got off scot-free? He got the worst of them all. He lost two of his sons. So it was very necessary for the Jewish people. It was very necessary. And that's probably what the Chumash means, b'krovaya kadesh, with my holy ones I'll be sanctified, v'alpnei kol ha'am ekaved, and there'll be honor for the people of Israel. The people shouldn't say, because we know, he's a leader, he has a sense of entitlement, they can do what they want. Leaders have to be held to a higher standard and can't have any form of entitlement. So that's why the thesis that we're developing in discussing is the death of Nadav and Avihu have nothing to do with Nadav and Avihu. It has everything to do with Aaron, and Aaron had to be punished for the sin of the golden calf. So we don't punish him at the time, but it's alluded to in the Chumash itself. Moshe Rabbeinu discusses it, and that's how the commentaries pick up on this idea that and that it was necessary for the people that the leader has to suffer sometimes. So that's really what. What it means to be a leader means your personal life has to take second fiddle at best. Moshe Rabbeinu had no married life. He had to separate from his wife. I think that was good. And who was Moshe Rabbeinu's kids? Nothing. It seems like Gershon, I don't, it seems there's a pasuk in the, I think it's chapter 18 in Shoftim where it says how Menashe did Avodah Zarah and the Nun is hanging because the commentaries say it's like little, like, you know, when you forget a letter and you put like a little thing and you put it on top, that's how it looks. So because it's really Moshe, it's B'nai Moshe, not B'nai Menashe, that they did idolatry. Moshe's kids, nothing came of them because Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't a family man. He was the family of Klal Yisrael. That's often what happens. The greater you are as a leader, the less you have with your family. So yeah, how do you balance that exactly? But here you have it to an extreme that the leaders had to lose their children. Moshe lost his children in a different way. Also had no relationship with the children. Okay, they lived, but it was no relationship because they were so creating the Jewish nation required such intensity and so much effort that what their life had to be led. What's good for the people? And who cares what it was for them or not? It's a certain thing. They were coming up to Pesach on a much, you know, smaller scale. I don't know, much smaller scale, but I remember Rav Schachter when the first year I was in the Shir already. So he said, you know, the famous story, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, we'll read about him on Pesach. You know, Hareini Kiven Shivim Shana, he got appointed, you know, they had to impeach Rabban Gamliel and they're not going to give it to Rabbi Yeshua because Rabbi Yeshua is always like that in politics. They had to get rid of the leader. But the guy who had the fight with him, Rabbi Yeshua, it wouldn't be nice. It'd be a slap in the face. So they had to look for a third candidate, to sort of out of nowhere, somebody who no one heard of. Rav Elazar ben Azariah, young, he was 18 years old. Whoever heard of him, has no political baggage, as they would say. I mean, I know these are not nice terms, but in a sense, that what was happening. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel, that they neither of them could be the leader anymore. And so they had to pick a guy with no baggage. So they went to Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And he said, let me ask my wife. So, what do we mean? Let me ask my wife. I mean, it's nice, but I don't know, 2,000 years ago. So why does the Gemara say that? It says because you become the leader of the Jewish people. That's it. His wife is never going to see him. He's going to work 24/7. He's going to be in, I would say, as a Canadian, he'll be in Ottawa. You know, politicians have very high divorce rates. They have very high divorce rates because they live half the week, okay, in Washington or Ottawa, and their family lives in Seattle or Edmonton or, you know, or Toronto, and they fly back and forth. It's a hard life. It takes a toll on your family. It really does. But that's what it means to be a leader. Is it worth it? I don't know. You have to figure it out. Depends who you are, what your leadership role you're playing. So that's, in a sense, that's what happened. Even with Rabbi Elazar ben Zari, he needed his wife's permission. And by the way, what did his wife say? Somebody answer. What does his wife say? You're going to say his wife said yes, right? Otherwise, you're going to be the leader. His wife said no.
Better to have the covenant for a short time.
That's what he answered. His wife said, no. Yeah, what do you want it for?
It's what do you want it for? Crazy. Yeah.
They'll impeach you. Today, they throw Rabban Gamliel, and tomorrow, they'll throw you. What are you, crazy? What do you want to be the leader for? So Rav Elazar ben Azar answered, better for one day. To have a golden cup for even one day. To be, what a merit. See, it's a beautiful idea. It's a tremendous merit to lead the Jewish people, even if they impeach me, then even if they throw me out the next day. So his wife apparently agreed. She bought the argument, and he did, and he grew white overnight. I mean, that's what the Gemara says. And I always say that wasn't a miracle. You lead the Jewish people, you become white very fast, and you age very quickly. And the truth of the matter is, it's really, you look at the pictures of the presidents of the United States, when they come into office and 4 years later, what they look like, and they age more than 4 years in office. The pressures are so much. Anyways, but so Aaron and Moshe had no personal life, in a sense, we're saying. Yes, Aaron could remain married, unlike Moshe, but he lost his children. And the reason he lost his children or half his children was because it was important for the Jewish people. That's what the Meshech Chachma writes. I don't know that I would say such a thing, but it was important for the Jewish people to see that their leaders get punished. And if it had to be this way, yeah, it's tragic, but what can we do? That's the way it works. Okay, so it's very, this is very powerful, I think. I'm sure there are other ways to understand the story, but this, and it's in both, like I said, the Netziv and the Meshech Chachma both lived, you know, at the turn of, the Netziv dies in 1893, the Meshech Chachma in 1926, but, you know, they're relatively recent biblical commentaries, and maybe it's a little, maybe these comments have a little more psychological insight. I don't know. I don't know if I want to historicize the comments at all, but, you know, we're all influenced by the surroundings in which we live, and, you know, we respond to the stimuli around us. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's related to the whole change in status. I don't know. That's just, I'm throwing that out there to think about. Okay. A few more things. Now, it's interesting. One more beautiful idea here. You see, you know, how El Safan and, Michelle, you know, took out, they were the ones to take out the body. So, yeah, by the way, it says, Vayitam Aram, right? Aram was quiet. Who wasn't quiet? Aram was quiet. If you look in the continuation of this story, so who gets mad? Moshe Rabbeinu gets mad. It's very, Aaron is accepting. He accepts God. He realizes it's punishment, whatever, even if he doesn't realize it's for Chet Ekel, even if it's not true that it was a punishment for Chet Ekel. Maybe none of me did something wrong. Obviously, the rabbis in the Jewish do pick up. They do say, they do look, as I mentioned earlier, maybe they were waiting for Moshe and Aaron to die. They weren't commanded to do it. They got drunk. That's why the next parsha is Yain Besechar Altesh. You cannot drink wine when you go into the, you know, in the temple. The halacha is when a kohen goes to Duchen, you can't go. I remember when I was a rabbi, this isn't a joke. I don't know if I should laugh or cry. But, you know, they had a kiddush club in Shul, Nunu, what can we do? And there was a couple of kohanim who would go to the kiddush club. They wouldn't go on Yontif, because they knew the halacha, you can't duchen if you have a drink. That's if you have a revit, the wine, 3 ounces of wine or liquor or whatever, you cannot duchen. That's halacha, because that's considered a status of being drunk in halacha. There are rabbis can't paskin a shah. This comes up on Purim. Rabbis answering questions. You had a revit to drink, you're not supposed to answer questions. I don't know, we don't think a revit really you know, distorts our judgment, but whatever, that seems to be the assumption here. So they wouldn't on the, they wouldn't go to the Kiddush Club on Yom Tov. So I, like I say, I don't know if I should laugh or cry. I guess I should laugh. I'd be happy a little bit. They know. So that's what some say. They had a little too much to drink. Festivities going on, the temple. Wow, l'chaim. Okay, they meant the drinking in a positive way. But so it is true, the rabbis do look for little sins, but they're not clear. It's not obvious. But this whole approach, and maybe they complement each other, sees it really as the sin of Aaron. They were not deserving of death. Just came. But so Aaron is silent. He recognizes he's accepting of God. But Moshe Rabbeinu gets angry. That's I don't want to say that's Moshe's, you know, character, but it is Moshe's character. That's he lost the right to go to Israel. He got angry at the Jewish people. He got angry. He killed the Egyptians. Some of that anger was good. He got angry. He destroyed the Luchad when he saw the golden calf. But that's then the Tiferet Yisrael writes about Tiferet Yisrael, the end of the Mishnah in Kiddush, and how Moshe Rabbeinu talks about himself, how he has an angry disposition. He worked very hard to overcome some of his negative traits. But it's clear from the Chumash that Moshe is a little bit hot, I don't know, hot-headed, but in many ways, very positively. But here again, it's not surprising. Rashi already quotes, he lost in Matot with the Hagalat Kalim after the war. He got mad at them and he forgot the halakha. We have that a few times. That Moshe lost his temper, and it wasn't good. So why does Moshe lose his temper here? So it says, the Torah tells us, Vayiksof, what does it say? Vayiksof al Elazar v'alitamar. Vayiksof, that's a pretty strong word. He got angry, wrathful. Artscroll, wrathful is even more than anger. The Artscroll translates, Vayiksof al Elazar v'alitamar, Madua lo achaltem et hachadat b'mkoma Kodesh, why didn't you eat the korban chatat? Why didn't you eat the remember they're offering sacrifices, you know, in the Mishkan. Why didn't you eat it? And the Netziv has an unbelievable idea here. He just continues the idea. He says, why did they have to die before they could eat the korban chatat? None of you couldn't eat it. They died first. He says, because the korban chatat, what's the korban chatat? When we sin, that's our atonement. So the complete atonement happens when it's eaten. And by having this korban chatat not eaten, that was God's sign that he hadn't forgiven them yet for the sin, or he hadn't fully forgiven them for the chet egel. In other words, at the time, probably Moshe and Aaron both thought that God forgave them. Vayinachem Hashem al harash, or dibir lasot lamo. God regretted. He was, okay, I'm not going to do it. But they didn't realize, not totally. And it's here that they realized it was not, you know, God still had some anger, so to speak, left, which he took out on them. And therefore, that symbolized that they had to die before the eating of the Korban Chatat. That's what the Netziv writes. Now, so Moshe gets mad at them. Why don't you eat the Korban Chatat? And so what's very interesting, who answers Moshe? So Aaron does speak. Vayidom Aaron is silent. And then the Torah continues with the story. They remove the body. They have the halacha of on the korbanot here, writes the ear, what to do to finish. And then Moshe gets angry at Elazar v'Itamar not eating, because the halacha is an onein, one who's in mourning before the funeral, before the burial, is not allowed to eat a korban. Moshe Rabbeinu apparently did not know that, or he forgot that. And so it says, Vayedaber Aaron Moshe. So I think that's actually very, very powerful. Aaron is depicted as being quiet, Vayedom Aaron. But here Aaron speaks up against or to answer Moshe's anger at the two remaining. You can imagine the scene. Aaron has just lost his two sons. Moshe tries to comfort him, Bekrovei Akadesh. And 10 minutes later, whatever, he's starting yelling at the two brothers who just lost their two brothers. And Elazar and Tamar, why aren't you eating? The korban is here. What's wrong with you? Don't you know the ritual has to go on? You know, you're Kohanim. You can't mourn. You got to go on. It's true. The Kohen Gadol has to continue the Avodah and the Beit Mikdash. As we know, the Kohen Gadol doesn't be Metame himself, cannot become impure, even for one of the seven relatives. So I don't have to put all these halachas into the parsha here, but there is, yeah, when you're the leader, you can't have the right to mourn. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, got to eat, guys. I mean, the scene, and Aaron, he speaks up, Moshe, I'm sorry. You don't know what you're talking about. Vayomer, Vayedaber Moshe. That's interesting. Vayedaber. I know it doesn't say Vayomer. Vayedaber is always harsher. Vayomer is always lighter. Vayedaber is a little bit harsher. Hain ha'yom ikrib et chatam et otam v'nei Hashem v'tikrena otika eila v'chalti chatat ha'yom ha'itav v'nei Hashem. Do you think if we eat the sacrifice, God will be happy? Do you really think that? Now in the state of being an onen, v'yishma Moshe v'itav v'nav. So Moshe doesn't say a word. He heard. You're right. You're right. And the parsha ends by Moshe admitting his mistake. And Rashi talks about that. That's the greatness of Moshe. He was willing to admit he made a mistake. I was reading this week. I don't even know where. I saw it somewhere where somebody was writing that this was not just that he forgot something. This is that Moshe misunderstood the halacha. Remember, he's Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the one who gave us the halacha. He's the one who spent 40 days at Mount Sinai learning the halacha. And here he is, you know, like just a few months later, and he forgets the halacha. It's kind of embarrassing that his brother, who wasn't there with him at Mount Sinai, has to remind him of the halacha. So that's the greatness of Moshe. He was willing to say, that's okay. He was not to be embarrassed and to admit his mistakes. So you have at the beginning this beautiful story, this idea of the taking the brothers or taking the cousins who had no desire for leadership because they could do with a pure heart, and then ending with Moshe Rabbeinu not being embarrassed to admit he was wrong. He doesn't answer Aaron and give an excuse. He just Vayishma Aaron Moshe Vayitabena. Okay, now just one other idea. What comes next? So I said, don't, what comes next in the Torah? What's the rest of the parsha about? No one did the Shlaim Mikra of Achat Targum yet. Kashrut. So the rest of the part, Kashrut, you know, food, let's eat, Kiddush Club, not Kiddush Club, Mafreset Parsa, you know, split hooves, choose its cod, a whole listing of, well, all the fish, the animal, on and on and on. Why? Why do we keep kosher? So we know keeping kosher is a big cluck. We don't really know why. There's no obvious reason. You can be a wonderful person and eat pork. Like the Rambam says, a Jew shouldn't say, oh, I don't want to eat pork. Say, I would love to eat pork. But God says I shouldn't eat pork. Why? I don't know why. God said so. Well, was there anything wrong with eating pork? And God said, you can't eat cow, eat pork. Right? I mean, you can find reason. But right, this is a classic example of a cluck. So the Torah says, "Ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, I'm the Lord your God. V'hikadishtem v'yitem kedoshim, I want you to be holy." It's not immoral to eat non-kosher. You're not a bad person. You're not a holy person. You're not a special. Holiness means a distinctiveness. You're not separated. A distinct relationship. Kashrut is related to kedusha, the holiness. Now, what just happened? Bekrovai akadesh. I'll be sanctified, right? What's holiness? Nadav and Abihu, right? Holiness. I think what's the Torah trying to tell us? Holiness is not only in the temple. The temple holiness, you got to be on such a high level. You slip up on the temple, one little thing, you're finished because you're in the presence of God. Holiness is in the home. Holiness, how you eat, where you go shopping for your meat, and what type of meat. So the right after Kedusha, oh, Kedusha has to be in the temple. No, the Torah tells us Kedusha is in the mundane of eating. So I think that's perhaps the connection between why in the world are the laws of Kashrut stuck in the middle of nowhere. Like, what do they have to do with anything? We're talking about the Mishkan. And next week, I understand, Tazriya, Metzorah, Tuma, Tara, the Beit HaMikdash. What in the world does Kashrut have to do with any of this stuff? It's not. So there are certain halakhot true with Tuma and Tara and Kashrut, but you know, it's there, I think, to teach us a notion of Kedusha. Okay, then it is Parshat Para this week, of course, and that's not by coincidence, of course. The Medrash says that what's the Para Duma? The Para Duma is the Kapara for Cheda Egel. That ba, that I forget the exact expression, I just enough time to look it up. The mother comes to clean up the dirt of the son, the egel. The egel is the, you know, the little kid or the little calf, and the par is the mom, right? So the mother has to clean up, the para duma has to come and clean up the egel hazav. So the parshat para is an atonement for the ched ha egel. That's the Medrash says. I thought it was kind of interesting. I think, you know, and it's a big clock, you know, the Paraduma is, we said Kashrut is a little bit of a chok, but the classic example of a law we don't understand is always given paraduma. You know, it makes the pure impure and the impure pure. All this strange ritual, killing a red cow and then burning it and taking the ashes and sprinkling it on day three. And so what is this? So we don't, zot torat hachatab. We follow it, even though we don't understand it. And of course, in a sense, we don't understand this whole parsha, really, of the chedek. But I think what the Torah, in other words, so here you have a contrast to Nadav and Abihu, if you assume this soon, right? Because Nadav and Abihu introduced Asher Lo Tziva Elohim. They brought an Eish Zara, Asher Lo Tziva Otam. They did something that God didn't command. Paraduma is following God's command to the T. You've got to follow it exactly. But I think there's something else, perhaps. And perhaps this is, I would say, the mystery of life. But you know, sometimes God forgives the biggest of sins, and sometimes the smallest of sins he won't let go. As we explained, why the Meshech Chachma kind of said, God can't let everything go, he has to show. But here, you know, Chet Egel is a way bigger sin. Like, it's the biggest sin we committed. And yet God, okay, maybe Aaron wasn't forgiven so much, but the Jewish people were forgiven for Chet Egel. And the truth of the matter, Aaron, he suffered, but he was forgiven. He is appointed the Kohen Gadol. In other words, he didn't have to pay the price. The elders, they lost their right. The Levim took over. But Aaron, yes, he did a terrible sin. He made a terrible mistake. But ultimately, we, the Kohanim, are the children of Aaron. Aaron is the Ohev Shalom, the Rodev Shalom. He was more beloved than Moshe. He's, you know, Hevi Me Talmid of Shal Aaron. We don't say Hevi Me Talmid of Shal Moshe. We say Hevi Me Talmid of Shal Aaron. Oev shalom, berodev shalom, ehobet apriyot, love people, mekarvim the Torah, bring them closer. Moshe's approach doesn't always bring people to closer to Torah as much as Aaron. Aaron's approach, love and concern. So Aaron, yes, he suffered, but he was, but ultimately God really did forgive him for the chedah egel. So you see the paraduma, sometimes God will tolerate the worst of sins, and sometimes the smallest of things he won't. And we don't always understand, like, why we don't ever understand. We don't always understand. We never understand how these things grow. But that happens in life all the time. Big things, you know, forgiven. And you see that in life all the time. Sometimes a person can make such a small mistake, and that's it. His career's over. You know, I don't have politicians either. They make one slip up of the tongue. They say something, a smitchel of racism, a little who knows what. That's it. Their career is over. Sometimes the guy can be a conductor, can do, I don't want to start mentioning names, can do some of the most awful things. Who cares? And just they go on like nothing happens. So that's the really chok of life. We don't really understand what goes on. Okay, I don't have time to compare to the Makate, but if you want, just for food for thought, if you want to take a look at the story in the end of Emor about the one who curses, and see, it's a total opposite of the story of Nadav and Abihu, and how long it took, about speech. Everything about that story is the exact opposite. I'll just throw that out. Maybe we'll pick that up another time. Okay, just to do a quick review. So we basically discussed, we began by saying the Netziv's idea that why Moshe's two youngest, you know, cousins, the children of Uziel, the youngest brother, were the ones who to remove the body, because in life there were people, you know, got a little bit of joy. Aaron had it coming to him. They're too powerful. They had a little, you would have given it to somebody else. Yeah, we're a little sad they died, but we're a little happy too. We got appointed. You know, the father died, but we got $1 million. That's life. That's normal. So, but here we wanted to appoint, the Torah wanted to go out of its way to point that nobody could make that claim. They were doing it. They had no motivation. They had nothing to gain. They were the last in line. They had no thought that they would get any power. And that's, and really, El Safan was willing to let his Misha was willing to let his brother take over. Shevet Levi, it didn't bother him. It bothered Korach, but Ephraim and Manasseh are the same way. It bothered Yosef, but it didn't bother Ephraim and Manasseh that their grandfather is blessing the youngest before the eldest. And that's a hard thing to do. Then we discuss why Aaron was quiet. So we basically, we worked with the thesis that Aaron recognized this was a punishment for him, not that he understood, and that he did this. It was his idea for the sin of the golden calf. God wanted Lahashmid, as Moshe said, to wipe out, and Moshe prayed, and he was 50% successful, and it has to be that way. First of all, people have to realize you can't just get away. They did get, as we said, they were forgiven, but they have to realize at times you're not going to be forgiven, and especially the leadership. It's very important. People totally lose faith in leadership. We all know that when we feel our leadership leaders are entitled and the rules don't apply to them. And we, you know, we see these examples all the time. So it's very important that the rules have to apply more. That's mitzvah baba avera. I was standing late. I can give many, many more examples of that in halakha. And therefore, even in the census, it mentioned when we count Aaron, we point out, Aaron, yeah, he was the father of Nadav and Abihu and they died. When we're counting the people, we keep mentioning that so the people should realize, yes, Aaron got appointed to be the high priest. And yes, the other people were taken away, the elders taken away, but don't think he got away, you know, without any punishment. Then we said, Aaron does speak. He's quiet, but he speaks up when Moshe yells at the two remaining sons. He accuses them of falsely not following the halakha. And Moshe is man enough to admit it and not to make any excuses despite any potential embarrassment it might have to admit he did it wrong. It's a very important message. And the continuation of Parsha into Kashrut, because Kiddusha, where we're talking about the Mishkan, yeah, there's the Kiddusha in the house. And we all know that. Our home replaced the Beit HaMikdash, and then the connection to Para Aduma. We read Parshat Para. The Para Aduma is it's what atones. That's what the Midrash says. Atones for the sin of the golden calf. And therefore, we follow God. You know, we have to follow God to the T, even when we don't understand it. That's the message of the Para Aduma. And yes, sometimes you don't understand what we follow. And we also, of course, don't understand God's ways. When God does forgive, when God doesn't forgive. Okay, if there are any questions, I'm happy to entertain any questions. I want to thank you for coming. Please, God, I'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. for our shiur on the Siddur. And so if those who are, you know, want to come, you're more than welcome. And invite a friend to this other shiurim. And, of course, on Sunday morning, Rabbi Liebtag will be continuing last series on how the prophets and the psalmists understood Tanakh. And then on Monday, we'll have our two shurim on Pesach, Avram Kowalski continuing, and Zev Elif making Pesach American. And then Tuesday, Rachel Danziger and Alex Israel being his last, the 10th part of his series on Eliyahu. Wednesday, Ari Mermelstein continues his program is his 3-part series on Pesach, and then Thursday Shuli is continuing next week back to Parshat Shavuot. So good to see everybody. Want to wish everybody well. Laila Tov. We hope to see you. Just let me quickly, if there are any questions. Esther Meringa Chashverosh. I mean, therefore, life was a tragic and heroic act. Was it an Aveira Lishma? That's an interesting question. I don't think the Gemara goes and presents it that way. Because Esther's basically, I don't want to say it, but she's basically on the pshat of the Megillah assimilated. Like, she wasn't so Jewish. Like, okay, you know, she wasn't, you don't get the feeling like that they're, the Jewish concerns are there. Maybe the Gemara asked that question though. So then, but the Gemara doesn't give that answer. The Gemara says, how could Esther live with the Ahasuerus? So the Gemara says she was basically Karka Olam or Hanad Atzmo. And then this have major implications for, I remember Rav Schechter once gave a shiur, I think he called it Esther and Artificial Insemination, where he learned some of the halachas from artificial insemination from Esther, because the Gemara said, no, it's adultery. How could Esther, or how could she marry this non-Jew? And especially if she was married to Mordechai, it's even worse. Well, the Bey was she married to Mordechai. So the Gemara says she was Karka Olam. It's hard to envision this. But anyways, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, she was very, very passive. And the adulterous act, the man can never be passive, but the woman can be passive. So it wasn't considered adultery for her. I think that's what the Gemara seems to say, but they don't say it was an Aveira Lishma. In other words, they try to mitigate the Aveira. They tried to say that Esther didn't do an Aveira by doing it. They don't say Aveira Lishma. By Yael, that's the Gemara in Nazir, I believe, Kaf Gimel, I believe that the Gemara talks on Yael and Sisra, there was an Aveira Lishma. She did something that would be normally a sin, but for ulterior motives. But remember, Esther didn't marry Ahasuerush to save the Jews. In other words, had Esther gone to marry Ahasuerush after Ahasuerush's decree and somehow get in, that's not what happened. She was already married. Okay, you can say it was against her will or whatever. She went forced into a beauty contest. But the bottom line is, it's not like she did something to save the Jewish people. She was there. So Ahasuerush said, "Oh, you better." So Mordechai said, "You should go and save the Jewish people." So no, I don't think Aveira Lishma would apply there. My father always said, if the person is not good in little things, he will never be great in big things. That is true. That's the tipping point. Now, isn't that the whole theory of the book? New York, they went on the squeegees, right? Isn't that how crime, they got crime lower in New York? They went after the broken glasses and the squeech. I think there's a whole book about that. Because instead of trying to solve the violent crimes, you start with the small crimes. And then if the windows are nice in the air, if they're broken windows, you're going to lead to violent crime. You know, if you clean up the little thing or the squeegee kids, you know, with the you know, they used to, when you remember, I remember when you drive in New York, you'd stop at a red light, that come and that clean your window. So yes, the window, the small things turn into big things. I'm not sure if that's exactly what you meant, but yes, you have to take care of the small things. The best example of that is Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. I mean, it's maybe not exactly your context, but with the Romans, when Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said to Vespasian, you'll be the king, and the Gemara says he gave him three wishes. So he says, Tainli Yavne v'chachameha, you let the Jewish people go to Yavne and, you know, develop Jewish life. The Romans didn't really know what, they would never have agreed had they known what was going to happen in Yavne, but they didn't know. So they said, okay, go to Yavne, who cares? Go to Yavne. And then he says, find a doctor for Rabbi Tzadok, because Rabbi Tzadok had fasted for 40 years to try to avert the Korban. Rav Soloveitchik beautifully explains, you know, usually leaders often are so concerned with the big picture, they lose sight of the small guy. You know, no, you have to be concerned with the little things too. You know, it's an excuse. I'm involved in big problems. No, involved in, a rabbi has to get involved. So I'm not just the rabbi, but I use it's the widow and the orphan, right? For Chaim Soloveitchik's famous line that the job of the rabbi is to help the widow, the orphan, and the poor. Not to give shiurim and gemara and this and not give partial shiurim, even is that to help the widow, the orphan, and the poor. That's the job of the rabbi. So you have to help the little guy, and then you can do big things. You've helped the little guy, then you can be like Rabbi Yochanan and Zaki and do big things. So I don't know, maybe that helps. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. Okay. All right. Broken windows theory of reducing crimes. Okay. Hope to see you soon. And
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good night. Bye bye. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi. It was very good.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. Yeah. All right.